welcome to the weekly Dorsey Wright podcast for Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. I'm Tammy DeRozier.
And this is Paul Keaton.
And welcome, everybody. Happy New Year to those of you who may have missed last week.
Wait, we're a week into the year as far as the market's concerned, and we can still sort of call it Happy New Year. Big difference than last year.
That is true. That's right. Yeah, it was not a very happy New Year in the market last year. I think at this point, we were down 5 or 6% already.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you call stumbling out of the gates. But this year, almost the opposite of that. I mean, it's been pretty stable, some sectors more than others. But nonetheless, the first 5 days of the year were up. And, more times than not, that bodes well for the market.
That's right. I was going to say, there's the old saying goes, so goes January, so goes the year. And then you kind of expand that, and it's so goes the first day, so goes the first week, so goes January and the year. And so we had a good positive first day, good positive first week, up a little over 1% for the S&P for the first 5 trading days. And so that now puts us on track for, about 80, if you go back to the 50s, it's about 85% probability that if you have good positive first 5 days, you have a good positive year.
Yeah. And so, where we are now, the market was up, and we're using the S&P 500 here, but the market was up 1.7%. And so, yes, what follows that is typically a higher batting average for the month and for the year when those first 5 days are up. As always, no real guarantees. And really, even as bad as the starting 5 days were last year and as bad as the month of January was last year, the market recovered and it was up about 10% last year. So, these are by no means guarantees. The one thing that we certainly know is a big difference this year versus last year as well, though, is what the sector leadership is in the marketplace.
Yeah, very different this year than what it was last year, and lots of rotation taking place, and that's what made 2016 such a tough year. Was that rotation, and it seemed like nothing could really hang on to the rotation. You had biotechs that were weak early in the year, then some of that healthcare started to come back. You had technology that was weak that ended up coming back at the end of the year. Utilities that were so strong at the beginning of the year, kind of low volatility, that then kind of fell off the cliff for the last part of the year. So it was just a tough year all around, and a tough year. You think back to even the 90s, when I think back to that period, it was that everything was going up, and it wasn't so fit and start. It was just kind of everything going up. But in reality, those years were really tough to beat your benchmark the S&P 500. People didn't worry about beating it too much, especially when you had a year when you were up 35%, right? So if you were up 32%, 31%, it was still good.
It really wasn't until, really after 5 or 6 years of that when the average investor was like, well, gosh, what do I need advice for? I can just go buy these Qs or whatever that might just double in a good year like 1999. Risk management, what's that? When things pull back, you just buy more, and then they go up to new highs. And then, of course, you had the 2000 through 2002, you had the bear market, which really impacted eventually all sectors of the market, but you had the absolute implosion of specifically technology, which is not only what a lot of individuals owned, but it was also by that point in time what made up the lion's share of many of the benchmarks. So, if technology were to go down 90%, but that would have happened early in the 90s, it wouldn't have impacted the S&P 500 nearly as much as it did after 2000, because by that point it was about 30% of the S&P 500, whereas at the beginning of that decade, technology was maybe half that of the S&P 500, and so it just grew to be such a big chunk of the benchmark, which then made the benchmarks harder to beat while they were going up.
Exactly, and I think that's where we were again in 2016, and it's going to be something that, as long as U.S. equities in large part are favored towards those top slots in Dolly, part of it is just staying long the market. When everything around you in the news comes out and just makes you want to have your finger on the trigger to come out of the market, a part of the feat of good management during these markets is staying long and not getting scared out when you, or if you do have sell signals, getting back in when everything feels so bad.
Yeah, and there's a few opportunities that give you the ability to maybe make up some ground on a fully invested benchmark without taking on more risk. And that's really what I think the draw to sector rotation is over time, is that we're looking for ways that without going on margin with equity exposure or investing in a way that's just not suitable for the client, even though as bullish as they may be, you know that there aren't that many clients that can really handle 80 or 90%, much less 120% equity exposure. And so something like the energy theme, that's something that's really important in terms of what we see moving into our ETFs, the ETF models, what's at the the top ranked sector in Dolly. And so when we look at the energy sector, it represents a good opportunity because energy, after 5 years of horrible performance, energy is not a very big weighting inside the S&P 500. And so if you have a sector strategy that can give you, 15, 20, 25% in the energy sector, that gives you the ability to, really have create alpha relative to that benchmark without taking on more risk in the equity markets as far as more equity exposure.
Yeah, and the opposite also works as well. When you think about one of the other strong sectors is financials. Right. And financials have a very large weighting typically in the S&P 500. So you really, it takes a lot of financial exposure in the market to be able to overcome and show that outperformance or even just keep up with the S&P 500 when you look at those sector weightings within there. Because how much are financials right now?
Well, the S&P is, they're 18%, which is second only to technology, which is about 21%, and you compare that to something like energy, that's 7.5%.
Right. So you can overweight energy. It's going to take you, like you said, about 20% in financials and technology just to keep pace with the S&P 500. So when you're thinking about that, you're trying to beat that as a benchmark, you look at your portfolio and you say, wow, financials have just finally come back into favor. How much should I buy in the portfolio? 20% is getting you to just to market weight thereabouts.
Mm. And, and speaking of financials, one of the things that we've done on the site over the past 4 months is decouple real estate from financials. So financials and real estate are each their own broad sector. And, it was a good, I think it ended up being great timing for doing that because all these rate sensitive sectors, of which real estate certainly is, they've really fallen off the map in terms of relative strength in the last half of 2016. And that was actually, a cause for some of the frustration. It was just another kind of trend that didn't play out in terms of something that sort of looked like it was a good area to be, but that move really fizzled out. But now with the independence of real estate pulled out of financials, you're really able to see that now within Dolly specifically, as real estate has gone from a sector in the top five down to dead last at 11th, where financials, unburdened by the rate-sensitive real estate group, has climbed steadily up, and it's now a top three ranked broad group. So you really are able to see the dispersion between those two things, which is important because they really behave very differently to the extent that we have the ability to look back at rising rate environments. Banks tend to benefit from that, and REITs historically do not.
Yeah, and you look at the KBE relative strength chart versus the iShares Total Market Index, the IYY, and you see that relative strength chart has given a buy signal for the first time in years. So column of X is exceeding a previous column of X's, so showing you that financials are likely, or banks are likely to outperform here in this market. And that relative strength sell signal had been in place for over 10 years. So this is a real and this is a real change. That relative strength chart had actually been on a sell signal for years now, since June of 08.
Since June of 08.
June of 08.
Well, we talked, I think, on a podcast, maybe last week, and with the old, the Trump Trust, idea of, looking at what the stocks were that did the best from the election until the end of the year. And interestingly, those stocks that are really the early movers and the big movers right after an election, for whatever reason, there's tends to be some genius in that from the market, in that those top 50 performance stocks tend to do really well the next year. And we provided some research going back to 1990, looking at every election. And on average, that basket of 50 stocks, whatever they may be and whatever the complexion may be, they outperform the market by an average of 15% over the next year. And what was interesting about this year's basket is that about half of them were financials.
Wow.
You know, so really, financials and energy made up the vast majority, but financials more than anything else comprised those top 50, and even if you looked at the top 100,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had, it was just riddled with financial stocks, and you know, a very different type of financial, you know, not the REITs, but the specific financials that are more larger banks, regional banks, broker-dealers, those types of things.
Those types of things. Yeah. And, you know, that brings up another point, Paul, that that we found that was interesting was we went back and looked at different factors. So when you think about momentum as a way to, you know, participate in the market, you've got growth, you've got value. Buyback has been another one. Mm-hmm. Companies buying back their shares, quality, dividend. And you look at these different factors over the last 10, 11 years, and what you find is that almost all of them, with the exception of dividend, have outperformed the S&P 500. So any one of those strategies that you picked would have outperformed your benchmark, the S&P 500. So, you know, that is a and we talk about this in our daily equity report from December 29th. It's got a great graphic in there. So that's a great inventory to just get some market exposure. Right, mm-hmm. over time. But what's also further interesting about that is that there's never just one of those strategies that's always at the best performing one, nor one that's always at the bottom or the worst performing one. They all tend to kind of rotate around. But if you went and you said, you know, I'm going to buy the best performing strategy from last year and I'm going to hold that for next year, that actually gives you a lower return than just buying the S&P 500.
Right.
That return chasing. And that's what people want to do.
It's the easy thing to sell. It's,
right.
It tends to be the easy way out. It's the emotionally sensitive route to go. And unfortunately, like with most things easy in life, it's not a path that adds any value. And it's really, you know, it's you would look at these a list of like really good smart beta strategies and say, gosh, it should be really difficult to have a disastrous performance if that was your investment inventory. But taking that approach of, yeah, just buying whatever was the best thing last year and then over the next year, that appears to be one of the ways to, you know, to really struggle with even what otherwise is a good inventory of investments.
And that's what goes back to those Dalbar studies about
yeah.
the, you know, people buying high, you know, selling low when you should be doing the exact opposite. And that's where we use the indicators to tell us when we need to come out, when things are high and starting to reverse down, when things are low, when we have to have that confidence to go back into the market. But interestingly enough, if you took that contrarian view, though, and said, instead of buying what was best last year, let me buy the factor that was the worst last year, that fell on hard times the previous year. Maybe it's readjusting or what have you, but we know is good over the long term. If you did that, your cumulative return from 2007 through 2016 over the last 10 years is 146%.
Right, which is, you know, well over twice the benchmark, which was the S&P 500 for that study. And so it really, and it makes sense if you think about it. If you have, you know, good factors, things that are robust over time, then buying them at the times when they were out of favor should be very constructive. It should be additive over time. If you believe in the process for, you know, the low vol story or quality or momentum, if you believe in that story and you believe in the mechanics, then, you know, you believe believe that it will succeed over any 10-year period, then, yeah, buying it the year that it was out of favor makes sense.
That's right. It doesn't work every single year.
Nothing does.
Exactly. If it did, we wouldn't be sitting here, right? Nothing works every single time.
Right.
But on average, that works well. And last year, the strategy that found itself in the basement for the first time in terms of performance in the last 11 years was momentum.
Right. And there have been other years where, you know, momentum has... it's struggled, and you've had lots of turnover, but it was the first year that, relative to all those other factors, that momentum was the laggard of the group, that there wasn't something that did worse or a few things that did worse. And last year that was the case, though. You know, it wasn't a great year from growth, and but it was a worse year from momentum that really struggled to put absolute returns up. And the reason really was, as we've talked about, there just wasn't any leadership in the market that lasted more than a quarter or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like every quarter was like this past quarter when, you know, momentum products had 30 or 40% turnover just to adapt to the changes that have come about in the marketplace. And it's hard, you know, when you see that much turnover, it just tells you that nothing's really sticky. And I don't think you really could feel good about that, you know, the stuff going in or going out. You know, it seems as though coming out of out of 2016, though, some of these things are sticky. They're a bit more convincing. The move you see in financials and energy, you know, those are the types of things that do appear to have some stickiness to them.
Yeah, and we're not seeing, you know, these first you know, handful of trading days or so in the market. No other sectors are necessarily emerging. These are holding on to their strength. And so that's, you know, so that's a good sign that hopefully we'll have some trends to follow this year.
Yes. And, you know, what you own is important, and what you don't is obviously important as well. And, you know, I know last weekend my wife informed me, she almost shed a tear. She said one of the spots she used to always shop at when she was like in high school, I guess, maybe college,
yeah.
I don't know, but was the Limited.
Yes.
And she showed me the news that they were shutting down all their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough thing. You go on their website and everything's half off and all the sales are final and that sort of thing. So it doesn't bode well, and it would follow suit with a number of you know, those chain retailers that have, you know, they're harder to find.
That's right.
And they shut the doors, and you look at the broader retail group, and you see things there that, you know, we haven't seen in a long time, and it's just maybe reflective that, you know, the way people shop are, it's just very different.
That's right. You look at, you know, Kohl's has come out with, you know, some negative news about their potential sales. Macy's, another one on its chart that's been very weak. But what's interesting is you see that Amazon, back above, you know, hitting the $800 level on its chart again, and all the credit card companies are doing fantastic.
So it does appear that people are spending money.
That's right. People are still spending money, apparently, because the credit card companies like Capital One, Discover, American Express, Visa, MasterCard, they're all at the tops, you know, in positive trends on their point and figure charts. Many of them are close to moving to new highs, if not at new highs. And so they're doing great. People are shopping. They're just not shopping at these department stores.
So traditionally retail, you look at retail sectors, retail sector ETFs, they just don't own those things, right? I mean, they don't own credit cards. They don't own the online places like an Amazon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it shows up when you compare those names like an Amazon to something like the SPDR retail ETF, which its RS chart moved into O's versus the market for the first time in 8 years.
Wow.
And, you know,
so here where you've got banks moving into a column of X's for the first time in 8 years, you've got retail moving back into a column of O's. And I very distinctly remember retail moving into a positive stance at the end of 08, beginning of 09.
Yeah.
And you would think that's the exact opposite of what you would want to do, that you would not want to buy retailers. Those were the exact right time to buy these retailers.
It was, yeah, that whole consumer discretionary theme. Mm-hmm. That was one of those real eye-catching things back in early of 09. It was something that lasted for a long while, but I would say we've seen more than just shots across the bow from the retail sector of late. But like you said, doesn't necessarily, you know, bode poorly for the economy and the overall market like we might have assumed years ago.
Right.
Because there's plenty of evidence now that, as you said, you know, people are still spending money. They're just not getting off their couch to do it.
That's right. Just not exactly. I'm for one. I'm right there with them, man. I'm shopping online all the time, but not in the store.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. Well, we'll be sure to keep you up on all of these trends throughout 2017, just like we did in 16. So stay here with us every Wednesday. We'll keep you up to date with things that are happening. And thanks for joining us into this new year.
Mm-hmm.